The following program is brought to you by Audio Journal, a radio reading service intended for a print-impaired audience. Material is selected with the interests of its audience in mind, with the goal to inform and entertain. The opinions expressed on this program do not reflect the views and opinions of Audio Journal, its board of directors, its staff, or volunteer readers. Welcome all to Audio Journal's Poets Corner, the program that offers its print-impaired audience and other listeners the opportunity to listen to poetry of people from all walks of life, of those from the distant past right up to the present day. This production is brought to you in part by the Memorial Foundation for the Blind. I'm George Bloomquist, and for the next half hour, I'll be sharing poems with you from pens of poets such as Lynn Unger, Seamus Heaney, Jane Hirschfield, and Martha Postlethwaite, to name but a few of the outstanding wordsmiths found in the superb anthology Poetry of Presence, 2, More Mindfulness Poems, from Grayson Books Publishing, 2023, edited by Phyllis Cole Dye and Ruby R. Wilson. In their introduction to this volume, the editors note in part that, quote, many poems in this volume delve into varieties of suffering, such as woundedness, illness, loss, death, as well as prejudice, bigotry, injustice, violence, and war, a host of tough stuff that, frankly, most of us would rather not deal with. But mindfulness poetry has the potential to crack open that tough stuff, one stanza, one line, even one word at a time. Mindfulness poetry can thus help us keep or regain our footing. It can provide a refuge where we can recharge when we're worn down, where we can just be. So, with that said, I'll now begin our program with the poem titled Breathe by Lynn Unger, in which the troubled narrator engages in a dialogue with the wind. It reads as follows. Breathe, said the wind. How can I breathe at a time like this, when the air is full of the smoke of burning tires, burning lives? Just breathe, the wind insisted. Easy for you to say, if the weight of injustice is not wrapped around your throat, cutting off all air. I need you to breathe. I need you to breathe. Don't tell me to be calm when there are so many reasons to be angry, so much cause for despair. I didn't say to be calm, said the wind. I said to breathe. We're going to need a lot of air to make this hurricane together. Lynn Unger is a poet, Unitarian Universalist minister, and dog trainer who lives in Vancouver, Washington, with her two Australian shepherds. Her books of poetry include Bread and Other Miracles, Breathe, and These Days, Poems of the Pandemic Age. The themes of human suffering and resilience is expounded in our next poem titled Chorus from The Cure at Troy by Seamus Heaney. Human beings suffer. They torture one another. They get hurt and get hard. No poem or play or song can fully right a wrong inflicted or endured. The innocent in jails beat on their bars together. A hunger striker's father stands in the graveyard dumb. The police widow in veils faints at the funeral home. History says, don't hope on this side of the grave. But then, once in a lifetime, the longed-for tidal wave of justice can rise up, and hope and history rhyme. So hope for a great sea change on the far side of revenge. Believe that a further shore is reachable from here. Believe in miracles and cures and healing wells. Call the miracle self-healing. the otter self-revealing, double take a feeling. If there's fire on the mountain, or lightning and storm, and a god speaks from the sky, that means someone is hearing the outcry and the birth cry of new life at its term. Here's a brief verse that ponders the wonders of patience and fortitude. It's called My Species by Jane Hirschfield. Even a small purple artichoke boiled in its own bittered and darkening waters grows tender and sweet. Patience, I think. My species. Keep testing the spiny leaves, the spiny heart. Jane Hirschfield, who lives in the San Francisco Bay Area, is an acclaimed poet, essayist, editor, translator, and educator. She has authored 9 collections of poetry, most recently Ledger, 2020, and she has received numerous awards. Deeply influenced by Zen Buddhism, her work consistently addresses themes of social and environmental justice and exhibits profound empathy for the suffering of living beings. Mindfully biding one's time while awaiting the opportunity to achieve one's bliss is explored in our next poem, Clearing, by Martha Postlethwaite. Do not try to save the whole world or do anything grandiose. Instead, create a clearing in the dense forest of your life and wait there patiently until the song that is yours alone to sing falls into your open-cupped hands, and you recognize and greet it. Only then will you know how to give yourself to this world, so worthy of rescue. Martha Postlethwaite has spent her professional life listening to and sharing stories as a minister, counselor, and spiritual director. She is a contemplative with a heart for the inner journey. She loves to read and write, and on many occasions, a poem has been enough to save her. Up next, Some Advice for Clearing Brush by Jeff Coomer. Walk noisily to declare your presence. The rabbits and deer will leave as soon as they hear you coming, but the snakes need time to process your intentions. Take a moment to be certain of what you're cutting. Many stems look alike down close to the ground, especially when they're young. Look up occasionally. Don't begrudge the wild roses for whipping thorns across your face and arms, or the honeysuckle for tangling your feet and pulling the pruners from your hands. You'd do the same in their place. Honor them with a clean cut. Never begin when you're angry, or you might not stop until there's nothing left to hold the soil. Always wear gloves and keep your eye on the blade. Many people identify themselves as by what they do, as is in the case of our next verse, Work Was His Religion, by Marjorie Sizer. It was his remedy when he couldn't make my mother happy, his fondest wish. When he went off to war, he thought he was supposed to, he figured that if he made it back, things would be golden. How could they not? Beautiful America! He found that cheaters win, and yet he would not. Listen, Work, you were his salvation. Red, white, and blue, long as a ditch to be dug. You never let up. Listen, Work, thank you. And will you help me, too? And don't go thinking he never had fun. He took his kids to the rodeos, the 2 p.m. and the 8 p.m. on the 4th of July. He said he'd keep buying my sister however many hot dogs until she had her fill. Don't go thinking I knew what I had. I didn't. But now I begin to. He said his vote didn't count. He said he was okay anyway. He said there's more important things than the mighty dollar. He was framing up a house when he said that, pounding a nail deep into a 2x4. He hit it, America, square, again and again. Here's a touching moment between father and daughter in The Pedicure by Annette Langlois-Grunseth. I sling a hand towel over my shoulder, carry a plastic tub filled with warm water to Dad's chair. Let's soak your feet, soften up those nails. I lift his size 14 narrow to my knee. He tells me about summers on his granddad's farm in Utica. Couldn't afford shoes, went barefoot for chores. He tells me how his arches fell, walking miles in moccasins as a golf caddy to earn money for Dartmouth during the Depression. Smart enough to get in, but had to work his way through. His toenails, dense as tree bark, are too thick to fit the clippers. I file gently. Then, squeezing lotion into my hands, I cradled his hardened heel in my palm, worked my thumbs up his flattened arch. He tells me flat feet and a trick knee kept him out of combat. He qualified for intelligence. He tells me he advised generals, gave daily briefings about battles in the Pacific and Europe. After kneading my way up his leathered sole, I rub circles into the ball of his 90-year-old foot. He says it's his first pedicure, sighs at how good it feels. Holding his history in my hands, I don't know it's the last time. Annette Langlois-Grunseth lives in Green Bay, Wisconsin. She has earned awards from Wisconsin Academy of Sciences, Wisconsin Fellowship of Poets, and The Mill, a place for writers. She has published 2 books and is a Pushcart Prize nominee. When not writing, she practices mindfulness kayaking or bicycling, where her muse tags along just for the exercise. Keeping life in its proper perspective can greatly help one in interacting with one's fellow man, as so noted in our next poem, If You Knew, by Ellen Bass. What if you knew you'd be the last to touch someone? If you were taking tickets, for example, at the theater, tearing them, giving back the ragged stubs, you might take care to touch that palm, brush your fingertips along the lifeline's crease. When a man pulls his wheeled suitcase too slowly through the airport, when the car in front of me doesn't signal, when the clerk at the pharmacy won't say thank you, I don't remember they're going to die. A friend told me that she had been with her aunt. They had just had lunch, and the waiter, a young gay man with plum-black eyes, joked as he served the coffee, kissed her aunt's powdered cheek when they left. Then they walked half a block, and her aunt dropped dead on the sidewalk. How close does the dragon's spume have to come? How wide does the crack in heaven have to split? What would people look like if we could see them as they are, soaked in honey, stung and swollen, reckless, pinned against time? Our next poem poignantly relates the loving interaction between 3 generations of women in a fleeting moment. It's titled Sponge Bath by Terry Kirby Erickson. Draped in towels, my grandmother sits in a hardback chair, a white bowl of soapy water on the floor. She lifts her frail arm, then rests it gratefully in her daughter's palm. Gliding a wet washcloth, my mother's hand becomes a cloud, and every bruise a rain-drenched flower. Terry Kirby Erickson is the author of 6 collections of poetry, including A Sun Inside My Chest, Press 53 Publishing, winner of the 2021 International Book Award for Poetry. Her work has appeared in many periodicals, and her awards include the Joy Harjo Poetry Prize and a Nautilus Silver Book Award. She lives in North Carolina. In the following verse, the narrator ponders the transient nature of physical existence and the material world. It's titled, Living in the Body, by Joyce Sutphen. Body is something you need in order to stay on this planet, and you only get one. No matter which one you get, it will not be satisfactory. It will not be beautiful enough. It will not be fast enough. It will not keep on for days at a time, but will pull you down into a sleepy swamp and demand apples and coffee and chocolate cake. Body is a thing you have to carry from one day into the next. Always the same eyebrows over the same eyes, in the same skin when you look in the mirror, and the same creaky knee when you get up from the floor, and the same wrist under the watch band. The changes you can make are small and costly. Better to leave it as it is. Body is a thing that you have to leave eventually. You know that because you have seen others do it. Others who were once like you, living inside their pile of bones and flesh, smiling at you, loving you, leaning in the doorway, talking to you for hours, and then one day they are gone. No forwarding address. Joyce Sutphen's first collection of poems, Straight Out of View, won the Barnard New Women Poets Prize. Her recent books are The Greenhouse, Salmon Poetry, 2017, and Carrying Water to the Field, New and Selected Poems, University of Nebraska Press, 2019. She was Minnesota Poet Laureate from 2011 to 2021, succeeding Robert Bly, and she is Professor Emerita at Gustavus Adolphus College in St. Peter, Minnesota. Up next, poet Denise Lowe offers a touching tribute to her Native American grandfather in Walking with My Delaware Grandfather. It reads as follows. Walking home, I feel a presence following, and realize he is always there, that Native man with coal-black hair who is my grandfather. In my first memories, he is present, mostly wordless, resident in the house where I was born. My mother shows him the cleft on my chin, identical to his. I am swaddled and blinking in the kitchen light. So we are introduced. We never part. Sometimes I forget he lodges in my house still, the bone house where my heart beats. I carry his mother's framework, a sturdy structure. I learn his birthright. I hear his mother's teaching through what my mother said of her. She kept a pot of stew on the stove all day for anyone to eat. She never went to church, but said you could be a good person anyway. She fed hobos during the 30s, her back porch a regular stopover. Every person has rights, no matter what color. Be respectful. This son of hers, my grandfather, still walks the streets with me. Some twist of blood and heat still spark across the time bridge. Here, listen. Air draws through these lungs made from his. His blood still pulses through this hand. Denise Lowe, Kansas Poet Laureate from 2007 to 2009, won a Red Mountain Press Award for Shadowlight. Jigsaw Puzzling, Essays in a Time of Pestilence is from Meadowlark Books, 2022. She is a founding member of Indigenous Native Poets and lives in California's Sonoma County. There's an old adage that goes, "No man is an island unto himself," and nowhere is that sentiment better expressed than in our next poem, About Standing in Kinship, by Kimberly M. Blazer. We all have the same little bones in our foot, 26, with funny names like navicular. Together they build something strong, our foot arch, a pyramid holding us up. The bones don't get casts when they break. We tape them, one phalange to its neighbor for support. Other things, like sorrow, work that way too. Find healing in the leaning, the closeness. Our feet have one quarter of all the bones in our body. Maybe we should give more honor to feet and to all those tiny but blessed cogs in the world. Communities, the forgotten architecture of friendship. Kimberly Blazer, past Wisconsin Poet Laureate and founding director of the INNAPO, Indigenous Nations Poets, is the author of 5 poetry collections, including Copper Yearning, Apprentice to Justice, and Dancing Resistance. An enrolled member of the White Earth Nation, she is an Anishinaabe activist and environmentalist. She is also a professor at the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee and the MFA faculty member for the Institute of American Indian Arts in Santa Fe. Up next, You Just Never Know, by Gloria Heffernan, in which the speaker extols her mother's approach to life's vexations. It reads, "My mother never practiced yoga. She never studied comparative religions or sought to find herself in the silence of rustic mountain retreats. Her mudra was a cigarette poised between the fingers of her right hand and a coffee cup cradled in her left. Her mantra was simple. With a slow exhalation, she would bring it forth from the silence. You just never know. I invoke her wisdom when a driver cuts me off in traffic, and I want to feel compassion instead of rage. You just never know where he's going or why he's racing to get there. I seek her grace when I feel inclined to roll my eyes at the woman in the supermarket holding up the line while she fumbles with a bundle of coupons. You just never know if her children had enough to eat last night. I think of her when I look at myself in the mirror, stretching my limbs in a sun salutation, her voice urging me to create space for compassion." Gloria Heffernan is the author of the poetry collection What the Gratitude List Said to the Bucket List, New York Quarterly Books, and Exploring Poetry of Presence, a companion guide for readers, writers, and workshop facilitators, Back Porch Productions. She has written 2 chapbooks, Hail to the Symptom, Moonstone Press, and Some of Our Parts, Finishing Line Press. Her work appears in over 80 literary journals, including Chautauqua, Magma, Stone Canoe, and Columbia Review. Shakespeare once wrote, "Parting is such sweet sorrow," as is the case in our next verse, Compassion, by James Cruz. Compassion sat quietly beside me that December night with my father in the dim light of his ICU room, then led me to the end of the hallway where I bought him a bottle of Coke I placed on his tray, unwrapping a straw and bending the end until it faced him. Now, I see, it was only compassion that kept my voice steady as I said goodbye to him, sensing it would be the last time, even as nurses hustled me out, said to go home and get some rest. Only compassion that made me linger by his bed, gripping the calloused hand that had fixed so much for me over the years, then moving that cold bottle of soda a little closer, so he could reach it once I was gone. A friend's courageous perseverance is the subject of our final poem today. It's titled New Bathing Suit by Terry Kirby Erickson. My friend is wearing her new black bathing suit. It came with the proper cups, made to fill one breast and the memory of another, which is not to say emptiness, but the fullness that comes to us with sacrifice. There is no more alive than she is now, floating like a lotus or swimming, lap after lap, parting the turquoise, chlorine-scented water, her arms as sturdy as wooden paddles. And when she pulls herself from the pool, her new suit dripping, the pulse is so strong in her wrists and throat, a little bird outside the window will hear it, begin to flap its wings to the beat of her heart. You've been listening to Poet's Corner, a production of Audio Journal, proud member of the Massachusetts Audio Information Network. If you have any comments or suggestions for Poet's Corner, please let us know by calling us at 508-797-1117 or by emailing us at info@audiojournal.org or by mailing us directly at Audio Journal, 799 West Boylston Street, Worcester, Massachusetts, 01606. Archived editions of this program are available on our website, audiojournal.org, or you can go to the Audio Journal app on your iPhone, iPad, or Android device. I'm George Blomquist, thanking you for listening. And now, stay tuned for other local programming brought to you by Audio Journal.
Bird note. There may be no busier bird during the nesting season than a male house wren, because just a day or so after migrating back north from the tropics, he claims a territory and sets to work checking out potential nest cavities. Might be a birdhouse, a hollow pipe, an old nut hatch hole, or one of last year's oriole nests. And in each of these locations, the male house wren builds a starter nest. He'll stack a couple of dozen tiny twigs here, several hundred there, and he'll use whatever else comes to hand, or beak, too, from nails and bits of wire to paper clips and hairpins. Anything twig-like to get the job done. The male house wren stays at it until a female pairs with him. She now picks one of the starter nests and takes over construction, building a sturdy platform of sticks topped by a cup nest lined with grass, hair, feathers, even snake skin. The male's leftover starter nests may discourage other birds from nesting in those cavities. People maintaining bluebird houses have learned to dump out these dummy nests once a female house wren has made her choice. This helps bluebirds find a space to nest, at least until next spring, when that male house wren gets busy again. For Bird Note, I'm Michael Stein. Bird Note is grateful to all listeners that provide financial support for this show. You can join them at birdnote.org.